Dubai Eye
103.8. I can safely say that I'm in the gang because I had my honey this morning all over my granola or whatever it was, some rabbit food that was put in front of me, but with a large dose of honey, which is sort of in keeping with our next guest, because Jocelyn McBride knows a thing or two about it. And of course, the beautiful creatures that create it. Founder of the Bee Bus, Jocelyn McBride, joins us live in the studio. Jocelyn, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, really kind of you to be with us here today. Nice to have you back in the studio. You're going to paper a view for us today. But before we do all that, let's get the latest update on the bus itself. How's the Bee Bus doing?
The Bee Bus is fabulous. We've been busy beavering away all summer. We've been putting on solar panels on the Bee Bus.
Oh, wow.
So now, thanks to Future Earth Energy Systems, who very generously donated all the solar equipment, we will draw all our AC from the sun, which is fabulous. And
wow,
it makes us really probably one of the most carbon neutral vehicles on the road. We also have our fuel from neutral fuel, which is recycled from old chip fat and things like this. So we're a very environmentally friendly bus, I'd like to think. Mm. And then also, I think the next exciting thing we're doing is with a fabulous guy called Genesco, we're putting VR on the bus so that the students can actually enter into the world of the hive right up close and feel as they're actually with the bees as they go about their daily business. So that should be kicking off fairly shortly.
Amazing. So things really coming on board. And it sounds like partners really sort of understanding exactly what you're trying to do with the Bee Bus. So you get a lot of people coming on board and asking how they can help.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's what has been fantastic about this whole journey is how the community has come together. From the Vendetta Racing team, who literally are putting on the solar panels for us and give us the lend of the bus, to, like I say, Future Earth Energy and Neutral Fuels. These guys have all stood up and said, yes, we get what you're trying to do and we want to be a part of it. So without them, we couldn't put four tyres on the tarmac every day. So it's fabulous. And of course, the schools have all been brilliant as well.
I might have been running before I can walk or walking before I can crawl with the questions itself. I mean, you and I have met. You've been into the studio very kindly a couple of times. You've talked about the Bee Bus. For those that might be tuning in for the very first time and going, what on earth are they talking about? What does the Bee Bus try to achieve?
Well, the Bee Bus is a fantastic mobile classroom, if you will. We take this monstrous 11.5 metre bus covered in bees with live bees around schools in the UAE, and we bring it into the classrooms and we try to energise the children into learning all about these fascinating creatures, about what they do during their lives, how they produce honey, and really why they're so important for our environment. They pollinate 1 in 3 bites of every food we eat and we drink, and you know they pollinate something like 70% of the world's crops, not to mention beautiful flowers and trees and all the oxygen that they then again put back into the system. So it's a wonderful learning journey we have with the children, and it's a lot of fun.
We've just been talking about World Humanitarian Day, which falls tomorrow. I didn't know until earlier on today when I caught up with Zina Zalameya for our extensive pre-show natter and get-together, that there's a National Honeybee Day as well.
There is National Honeybee. I think these ideas are gaining traction now because people are getting to realise how wonderful these animals are and, you know, how much they contribute. You know, things like our lovely strawberries, avocados, broccoli, all these farmers rely on pollination. And this is just a gentle nod and a thank you to all those beekeepers around the world who work tirelessly with their bees to provide good honey to the population and pollination services throughout more or less every country on the planet.
It's... When was it? Yesterday in the States?
It was yesterday. Yesterday was National Honeybee Day.
Nice. Look at that. So it is this time of year. Why do we need to have a honeybee day? Why do we need to honour the world's hardest workers?
Well, I think it's one of these little insects that we never notice at our feet or around our head unless they're coming, unless they bump into you accidentally. They're not like wasps, they're not aggressive. And I think we have to appreciate them just because they're really hardworking. You know, a typical honeybee will work its whole life of 6 weeks to produce a 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey.
Mm.
And it will literally go around the world a couple of times to do that. And they do so many good things along the side. You have different, there's up to 20,000 species of bees, of which 10 are honey producing.
Okay.
And so it's just a gentle reminder that, yes, from your delicious granola breakfast with honey, or your lovely honey shampoos, or your soaps, or skin regimen, all of that is thanks to a lot of the work of the honeybee.
So pay homage to the honeybee. Talking of honeybees, I mean, we've talked in the past, and it's well documented, that certain species of bee, and many insect species, are very much at risk these days because of the prevalence of insecticides and other modern methods of farming and other other pollution issues that are going on around the world. Are the honeybees at risk in any way at the moment?
I think all our insect life are at risk. You know, we share this wonderful planet of ours with about 8 million species, and a lot of them are under stress, and especially the honeybee. You know, I think commercial honeybees last year, I think they lost 40% in 1 year, which is an awful lot in America alone. Areas of Germany have recorded between 45 and 70% drops in insect life over the last few years. So there's a lot of work that these insects do that we're maybe not quite aware of. And it was one of the things we have to get our mind around it. We have to work with nature. We have to realise we're not the only species on the planet and that we must always come first.
Mm.
We must find a way to live side by side with all the other animals and plants and that make up this wonderful place we all call home.
I know that you're also a member of the UAE Beekeepers Association. What's the group doing to sort of raise awareness? And can you buy local honey, locally produced honey?
Oh, there are some fab local honeys being produced now. There are great local beekeepers like ANHB. There's Olivier Cantegrel, who runs a little bee farm right in the middle of the city.
Wow.
There's lots of privateers. There's lots of bigger companies. There's a huge honey industry up towards Alain and towards Aldeid. There's plenty of people who are doing beekeeping and local beekeeping, and you have two types. You have your commercial honeybee, which is generally the Apis mellifera, and then you have our lovely little native honeybee, and it's the cutest little thing, and it's very gentle, and it gives the most delicious polyfloral honey, and I think everybody should try and get hold of some. It is hard to get hold of, but it is absolutely delicious.
I was going to say, I don't see them on supermarket shelves, but yeah.
I suppose because of production, isn't it?
Production here is very limited. Yeah. It's a function of the climate. Mm. Obviously, the European honeybee has higher yield. Local honeybees have to fight various climatic conditions and obviously the same stressors like pesticides, creeping urbanisation, and so on.
Mm.
But generally, their yield can be only between 10 and 12 kilos in a season, whereas the honeybee can be up to 50. So there's a huge difference. And I often get asked, why is local honey so expensive? And that really is why. It takes a lot more effort and time to look after these lovely creatures so they can produce honey.
So last week, the Ministry of Interior and National Ambulance posted a video on their social media channels and their YouTube channel, basically not so much warning, but also advising residents of the UAE how to deal with bee stings, which I found really strange, you know, because I thought, wow, you know, I've never seen anything like that before. The premise being that at this time of the year, with temperatures rising, there are more bee stings out there. And rather than people call the ambulance every time they get stung by a bee, this is what you should do. So it was a very sort of practical example of what one should do as well in the event of being stung, and not to call an ambulance unless after 30 minutes there's been some sort of anaphylactic reaction that needs more medical attention. I mean, what's your advice for those that have been stung?
I think, to be honest, although I'm not a doctor, if you start to exhibit any breathlessness or systemic reaction on the body, then you're having a severe reaction and you should obviously go to your nearest hospital and seek medical advice. If you're just one of those people for whom it is an irritation, I actually just used to dab a bit of honey on it.
Oh, really?
and that worked for me. Ice also works perfectly well. Take an antihistamine, and normally that's enough.
Yeah.
Just clean it, that's it.
I mean, those old urban myths of having to take the tail out or suck the venom out and things like that, is that something that...
Actually, yes, it is. That is one that works. Obviously, when a bee stings you, it kills itself because the sting comes away and it stays in you. And eviscerates the bee at the same time. So, but what you want to do is get a credit card or something like this and scrape it out back the way it came in, you know, to remove it. Because as long as that is in there, it'll still keep pumping venom into your body. So it can pump on for a little while after you've actually been stung. So you want to get rid of that sting as quickly as possible, either with your, and just try and do it as quickly as possible.
What about here in the UAE? Well, it's been either a weekend of celebration or a weekend of hiding yourself away in your bedroom for those receiving their A-level results. How did the UAE fare?
Well, this is a great story. The first big takeaway from this is that the majority of our students here in the UAE actually did really well. So congratulations to everybody who've got their results. A lot of the key schools are posting record-breaking results, and that is fabulous to see. But there is a great story today in the National, and it's about UAE students who are heading to Britain, and they're worried about Brexit impact. And more than that, they're actually worried about the xenophobia that they feel is resulting from this really oppositional talk that's going around Brexit at the moment. And I think the National have done a good job in highlighting issues like what will happen to the Erasmus programme. The Erasmus programme is a fantastic concept which allows post-A-level students to do part of their degrees in other European countries. And this is fabulous for all sorts of reasons. You're exposed to different cultures, different languages. It encourages friendships and holding hands across nations. And this is just one of the many queries which now are starting to be brought up by students. Having been through this last year with my own daughter, going off to university after having lived her entire life in the UAE is a very stressful experience. Trying to navigate the London Tube, figure out how to get national insurance numbers, how to sort out everything from laundry to school books. I think this is just one more area of worry where parents wish their children didn't have to think about it.
Yeah, it is a concern. I know I haven't been very sort of outspoken either way about Brexit, but having spent a bit of time over in the UK during the summer, I mean, regardless of it, it's so disheartening to see the confusion in the UK at the moment. The people are just aren't planning for the future because they don't know what's going to happen in the future.
I think having just come back myself, there is a strange feeling of either absolute overload and lethargy. In other words, please just make it all go away. Or there's this hyper concern going, what now? What about our students? What about our international students? What about trade? What about the border? Where I come from in Northern Ireland, it's a major concern amongst family members who I talk to. But there doesn't seem to be very many concrete answers coming out of the ruling bodies that are over there. They're all kind of shrugging and going, let's see. And that's a worry. And you can see why students are becoming worried about this, because it's maybe going to impact them 1 or 2 years down the line, maybe where they thought they were going to go to Paris or Amsterdam for a sandwich year. Maybe that will now no longer be possible. It's all up in the air again.
Brexit Day, October 31st is the deadline for Brexit. Obviously, lots of chat on the Business Breakfast and, of course, across the station here at Dubai Eye in the build-up to that one. Whether it be education, whether it be business, whether it be a residency, how is Brexit affecting you? That'll be something that we'll be discussing in more detail. We turn our attention now to the battle against plastics, specifically plastic bags. Where's the latest country that is considering a ban?
Well, it is Germany, and the German Minister for the Environment has come out and said, we are getting rid of plastic bags, period. Wow. We will not have them anymore. They already took the step in 2016 where they would reduce plastic bag consumption by charging, and they saw a 64% decline. on the use of plastic bags. But now they've said, no, that doesn't go far enough. We are now going to look at permanently banning the plastic bag. And I think that is fantastic news. And it works. You can see even in England, since they introduced the 5p charge for a bag, they've reduced plastic bag consumption by 90%, a cracking 90%. And I think that's something that should be emulated and copied by everybody, really.
There's no excuse, really, is there? I mean, I was thinking about it over the summer as well, where, you know, and I spent a bit of time over in Europe, and you know, everyone goes out with bags. You know, you take bags with you to the shopping mall, to the market.
It's just a habit. Yeah. That's what it is. And, you know, it is quite depressing here sometimes when you see them put a plastic bag within a plastic bag to put in a third plastic bag. You know, so if I could ask anybody out there listening today, just invest in a bag for life, take it along with you and use it. Mm. Or if any business owners out there run grocery stores, train your staff to say, do you really want that plastic bag? Mm. So that we can start this message here and get on top of it. And hopefully one day we'll also get to the point where Dubai and the UAE, and in fact the whole GCC, will just say goodbye to plastic.
But unfortunately it does take rather sort of bold moves from governments to make that first step, doesn't it? I mean, people are constantly looking for convenience, and you know, as much as a lot of us would think and always consider or take a bag with us to a supermarket, there are other times where you forget and therefore you fall into bad habits, etc. If it's just not available to you or you have to pay for that privilege, then that's the deterrent, surely. And until the big, I mean, we don't have to do it worldwide. We don't have to do it countrywide as yet. I often think, you know, maybe if Enoch or EPCO or the petrol station started with the process, and then other companies joined in, that would start the movement.
I think it just takes some brave retailer out there to grab the gauntlet, as you say, and just say, we're doing this. Because I really do feel, from everybody I talk to, that the population here are ready for a no plastic scenario. And yes, we all get lazy, we all forget bags, but if we started charging a derisory amount every plastic bag we use, people would start to think twice. And it's not the amount of money in question a lot of the time. It is actually the point where it makes you stop and think.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing. And I would love to see this part of the world follow on shortly.
Do you do your bit? Talk to us about the suggested ban on plastics. How do we get that message across to more people? Do we follow the route of countries like Germany, France, and what was it that we talked about recently, Zines? Was it Kenya or Nigeria or one of those? No, I'll tell you exactly where it is. It'll come to me in a minute.
It's in Africa?
Yeah, it's an African country, which is one of the great examples of the ban on plastics.
Yes, and they've absolutely banned all plastic bags entirely, all plastic wrapping.
Tanzania?
Is it Tanzania? I think it might be Somalia.
Tanzania, latest African nation to ban plastic bags.
Yeah, I think they're the latest. I think it's Somalia is the one that has sort of led from the front in many ways.
I think you're right.
Yeah, we will have a little look into that
one. It's our starter for five.
It's our starter for five. Your follow-up for another five is the Science Photographer of the Year Awards 2019. You've been having a look at the entries.
Now, this is just fabulous. This is one of these things. This is a fantastic example of what happens when science meets photography. You come out with these brilliant photographs. And it's been in, it's on a great website called Mother Nature Network, although it's been picked up by a lot of other newspapers as well. And it shows you this beautiful micro photography of things like stag beetles, bubbles, sky night, different nebula across the cosmos. Fabulous stuff. But my favourite of them all is an electron micrographed photograph of something called the Tribolium confusum. In other words, the confused flower beetle. Those little things that scuttle around inside your cupboard from time to time here in the UAE. And far from looking confused, actually, I think that is the smuggest looking little insect that I've ever seen. This little beetle that I've ever seen. He looks so smug and happy and very space age-ish, I think.
I just love some of the names, though, those things. I mean, who comes up with the confused flower beetle? Really?
Yes. What's going on all about? As opposed to the organized one.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does look amazing. And, you know, this is, science is wonderful and nature is wonderful. And it's wonderful we're going to Mars and out into the cosmos and we can see more than ever. But when you look down deep into Earth, we have just some amazing, nifty little creatures here with us. Yep. So check out those photographs because they really are fabulous and worth a look.
Where can we see them, Zines?
It's on Instagram, particularly that photo of the confused flower beetle.
Confucius, the flower beetle. He is up on our Instagram site.
Yes, at Dubai I 103.8 FM.
Get yourself on there at Dubai 103.8 FM to have a look at some confusion and more. We were in debate as to which was the country over in Africa that had implemented that plastics ban. Paul Collins might have the answer. He's just been in touch on text message.
Yes, and Paul's right. Rwanda, he says, I believe was one of the first, and then Kenya, and then Tanzania only recently. People say Africa's not progressive. We should be taking a lead out of their book. It's a page out of their book. It's simple. Do it countrywide and be the first Middle Eastern country to do so. I once challenged a child throwing a bag out of a bus in Kenya. That won't happen again.
Good on you. And you're so right. Rwanda was the one that I was thinking of, Paul. So thanks very much indeed for putting me out of my misery there, because they implemented this outright ban, which is fascinating, because a lot of people will think of Rwanda and they'll think of the past and the tragedies that that country has gone through in the past. And that you look at the progressive approach of to the future, and the fact that not only have they had this outright ban on manufacture and sales of bags, which Kenya have now picked up recently, Rwanda, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, have these, it's either a day a month or it's a day every 2 months where everybody, They have a national pickup day in terms of picking up plastics.
Isn't that just fantastic and amazing? And how must they feel as a country in terms of national pride when they're able to say that they are at the cutting edge of sustainability? And it's a matter for every person in their country, every citizen. And I think that's just wonderful and something that has to be emulated elsewhere.
Mm. Let's get on to your stories if we can, Justin, because a couple more for us to wrap up on before we say farewell. Obviously, climate change very much to the fore at the moment. Greta, what's her face, is somewhere in
Thunberg.
The middle. That's the one. She's in the middle of the Atlantic at the moment. She has taken the boat over to America for the forthcoming summit on climate change. Prince Harry's getting it in the neck at the moment because he's been to a climate change conference down in Italy recently. He took a private jet to that one and stay on a private yacht as well. You've got more news on this one of those that are sort of giving to the cause towards climate change.
Well, I like this story because it's a positive story about somebody who's very rich, who has decided sustainability isn't just about recycling plastics or having the correct bins in the corporate office and tick boxing off your matrix. This is the story of Julian Richer, who is a former Tory donor, and he's worth about 160 million. And he has decided that sustainability at its heart also means living in a healthy community. So he started with his own staff and he's basically given over a huge amount of shares to the staff.
Nice.
If you're there every year, you get £1,000. He owns holiday houses throughout the world. The staff can use those for vacations.
Really?
Yes, this guy, he's on a mission. He also wants to bring down shady bosses who put their profits into faraway corporate bank accounts where they can't be found. And he's a vociferous opponent of zero-hour contracts. And this kind of big business attitude of, if I can get away with it, why should I pay for it?
Yeah.
And I'm a great believer that a lot of our huge behemoths in this planet who are worth billions upon billions are just not stepping up. And here you have somebody who launched his firm in the 70s, and he's actually fights injustices to bring down tax dodgers. And he thinks it's a disgrace, as it is, that 1.7 million people in the UK are on zero-hour contracts. And then there's a follow-on from that where they can't get access to housing because landlords won't let them won't give them housing. Private landlord certainly won't. And he set up a tax dodging quango to try and nail those people who don't pay their fair share. So I think it's wonderful. Even to the point where he makes sure there's doors on all his stores so his staff don't have to suffer the effects of long-term street pollution. So that to me is sustainability in the community, sustainability in action. We don't all have to be multi-billionaires to do the right thing and the positive thing. He is obviously very wealthy, but he also recognises that unless his staff are happy and healthy and working alongside him, he doesn't really have a strong basis for underpinning his business. And I say hurrah for that and well done to him.
Yeah, well done to you, Julian. Richer by name, rich by nature.
Indeed, indeed.
Right, let's get on to one final one before we wrap things up. And we can't say farewell before talking all things dinosaur. It's going under the hammer.
There is a 10-year-old inside us all that wants a real live dinosaur, isn't there? We've all done it. We've all gone down to the beach and tried to dig up a fossil. Well, this story just tickles me because I think it's one of those uniquely Dubai stories. There is a 24.5-metre long, 7-metre high dinosaur in Dubai Mall, and they're selling it on the 25th. And the starting bid is a cool 14.6 million. So if you have room for it in your cavernous atrium here in Dubai and you fancy something of a really cool dinner talking point, I think this could be the thing for you.
Put your dinner table in the middle of the Diplodocus. You could have Diplodocus dinners, couldn't you? Now, there's an idea. Surely there's a little talker for you out there.
Or a slide down the neck. I don't know. It could be anything.
How sturdy it is. But this is the Diplodocus skeleton, which has been on show in Dubai Mall, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, it was the one that was discovered in Wyoming in 2008. And obviously now it's looking for a change of home.
I'd just love to know who buys this thing. I'd love to know who buys it.
I want to know where they're going to put it, right?
Yeah.
You know, where do you put something this tall and this, and who dusts it? How do you dust something of that size?
You need a team.
You need a team of Diplodocus
cleaners.
Cleaners.
The Diplodocus dockers.
CVs to Tom.
There they are. I'm coming around to the idea. Jocelyn, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us and for being our paper reviewer today. If people want to find out more about the Bee Bus and jump on board, how do they get aboard?
Just pop onto our website, www.beebus.me. And we also have Save the Bees UAE Facebook page. And we also have our Instagram, the_bee_bus.
Well, thank you to you. Thanks also to all those that contributed to the show.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.